It's happy past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike presents Information Please. You send us tough questions, and we provide tougher experts. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more, plus a 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of duplication, Information Please uses the question that was received first, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I introduce our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, unrehearsed and completely spontaneous, as you know, Information Please continues on its go-as-you-please path. And tonight we have the following experts: the conductor of the New York Post's Conning Tower, the lyrical Franklin P. Adams, his distinguished sidekick, the sports authority and rememberer-in-chief, John Kieran, and we also have with us as our guests the well-known New York attorney and New York State Congressman, Mr. Kenneth Simpson, and Judge James G. Wallace of the New York Court of General Sessions. Now remember, for each question that's missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now we'll begin, shall we, with a question coming to us from Fred A. Hood of Walton, New York. Judge Wallace, about how far back would you say your memory went? Pre-Adams or post-Adams?
Well, I should say trifle pre-Adams.
Trifle pre-Adams. Well, you would be the first on this program of whom that could be said. See how far back it goes on this question. What event made the headlines on each of the following days? I have 4 days. Let's see if we can get 3 out of 4. Now, the first, March 11th to 14th, 1888. Well, those are 4 days. Judge Wallace.
Blizzard?
Yes, the great blizzard of 88.
I remember it very well.
You do remember it, flake by flake?
Flake by flake.
Mr. Adams, you had your hand up, too, did you not?
I would have said the blizzard, but I read about it as a child.
I remember I couldn't go to school.
Well, I think that places you, Judge. Now, how about January 20th, 1937? That's a much more recent date. Mr. Simpson.
That was the date of the inauguration of Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Why is it a date specially to be remembered, Mr. Simpson?
By me or?
Well, generally.
Well, because it was the first time in the history of the United States that a president was inaugurated on the 20th of January rather than on the 4th of March.
Yes, by what authority was that
done?
By
the authority of the 20th Amendment.
100%. Go to the head of the class, Mr. Simpson. That's very good. Now, how about February 15th, 1898? February 15th, 1898. Mr. Adams.
I think that was the date of the sinking of the Maine.
Yes, indeed. You certainly remembered the Maine, Mr. Adams. That's 3 out of 3. And how about May 28th, 1934? May 28th, 1934. Mr. Adams again.
34. This is... I think that was the day the quintuplets were born.
That's right. As... Very good. That's very good going, Mr. Adams. 5 out of 5 on that, Mr. Adams. That gives us 4 out of 4 on the headline dates. What can you do with this one? This comes from Marion F. Colian of Washington, D.C. I want you to recite some lines of poetry for me, if you can, gentlemen. Not songs, if you don't mind. About 3 different kinds of fruit. Lines of poetry about different kinds of fruit. 3 different kinds. run through the fruit in your head, gentlemen. Apples, pears, bananas.
No songs?
No songs. Lines of poetry. Genuine poetry. Are you all you gentlemen meat eaters? Well, let me start you off, shall I? How about the description of Santa Claus in The Visit from St. Nicholas? A nose like a cherry, wasn't it? That's one. We don't seem to be doing very well on this one. Mr. Adams.
Comfort me with apples, for I am sick.
Yes, very good. You forgot to say what it was you were sick of.
I think that's from the Song of Solomon.
Yes, and what is it that you are sick of? For I am sick of love. Don't you remember it? For I am sick of love. That's right. Now, how about another one? Mr. Simpson.
The little foxes that eat our grapes, for our grapes have tender vines.
Yes, that's a very good one from the Old Testament, too. I'll accept those as lines of poetry. And now, how about one more? Oh, I should think we ought to be able to get one. How about the famous line from A.E. Housman about the cherry tree? Any of you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
loveliest of trees, the cherry now is hung with bloom along the bough. Well, I'm sorry, gentlemen. I think that will send, courtesy of Lucky Strike, $25 to Miss Killian of Washington, D.C., plus a set of the Britannica. Oh, there are a number of others. How about Feed Upon Strawberries, Sugar and Cream from Mother Goose Rye?
Till cherry ripe themselves do cry.
Now, why didn't you come in before?
I didn't think of it.
Raymond Abbott of Burbank, California, don't seem to be able to get off fruit, sends this one in. This is one that he wants you to get 3 out of 4 on also. Name the present justice of the Supreme Court who was appointed by the following presidents. Now, the first is President Wilson. What present justice was appointed during that administration, Mr. Simpson?
Mr. Justice McReynolds.
That's quite correct. What year would you say?
About 1913.
14. That's good enough. Thank you very much, Mr. Simpson. That's good going. Now, how about President Coolidge? In his administration, what justice was appointed? Mr. Simpson again.
Mr. Justice Roberts?
No, I'm sorry.
Harlan Stone?
Yes, Harlan F. Stone. That's quite right, Judge Wallace. I'm afraid we can't count that right, though. We have to count Mr. Simpson as the answerer there. That gives us one wrong. Now, how about in Mr. Hoover's administration? What justice was appointed? Mr. Simpson again.
The Chief Justice.
Yes, that's quite right. Chief Justice Hughes. And there was also one of the non-Chief Justices appointed.
Mr. Justice Roberts.
You were right there. Justice Roberts in 1930. Now, how about in Taft's administration? What justice was appointed? Have to get this one right.
Benjamin N. Cardozo?
No, I'm sorry, Judge Wallace. It was justice, at that time, Justice Hughes. Now Chief Justice Hughes, but then appointed as a justice. Well, that will send $25 of Lucky Strike's money to plus a set of the Britannica. 2 wrong out of 3 so far. Lucky Strike has just so much money and no more, gentlemen. Ruth T. Smith of Menlo Park, California, sends this one in. Get 2 out of 3. This is about pirates. What pirate, of fact or fiction, was a member of the British peerage? A member of the British peerage, Mr. Adams. So far, you're okay.
Pirate?
Yeah, a pirate.
Frederick.
Who is Frederick?
Frederick in Pirates of Penzance.
Yes, or any of the pirates in the Pirates of Penzance. Weren't they all noblemen?
They became so.
Yes, they were strayed noblemen, as it were. That's quite right. Now,
not
what
much of a jump.
What pirate, in this case a fact, is said to have buried some of his treasure less than 150 miles from New York? Stay where you are, gentlemen. Mr. Kieran.
Well, Captain Kidd.
Captain Kidd. And where is he supposed to have buried that treasure?
Along all the shore. It's 150 miles each way.
Well, if you'd care to know, Mr. Kieran, though I know you're not greedy, it's in Gardner's Bay at the east end of Long Island. In case you want to go clam fishing or something like that around there sometime. That's quite right, Mr. Kieran. How about this one? What pirate became famous because of a wild pitch? Mr. Kieran.
He was a fellow with an odd name. Pitched for the Pittsburgh Pirates on the last game of the World Series at the Yankee Stadium in 1927.
Oh, boy, that's right.
Wait a minute. His name just doesn't come to my mind. He's a great big fellow.
I suppose I give you his first initial.
Yes.
M. That is the initial of his last name.
M-A-M-A-U-X.
No, not M-O. What's his nickname? Give me his name.
I don't know his nickname. Oh. Do you know Mr. Simpson?
Milton?
No, Milgers.
Jovo Milgers.
That's right. And what happened as a result of that wild pitch, Mr. Kieran, that you remember so well?
The ball game and the World Series was over.
Good enough. That gives us 3 pirates out of 3 pirates, gentlemen, and sends us on to this one. This comes from Edith Stevens of St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada. Have to get all here. Now listen carefully, gentlemen. I'm going to give you the last word of each of several lines from the choruses of old-time songs. There are going to be 3 of them altogether. The last words. You are first to name the title of the song, and then you can either sing the chorus or you can quote it. And if you prefer to sing, we have a studio pianist here who will give you the key and start you off. Now, here is the first set of last words of the lines.
Censured, of a chorus or of a...
Of the chorus, that's right. Of the chorus. Censured, despised, ventured, that's a peach of a rhyme, advised, Mr. Adams.
That is, she's more to be pitied than censured.
That is correct. And could you
She's more to be helped than despised.
Very good. Go ahead.
She's only a lassie who ventured on life's stormy way, ill-advised.
Very pretty. Very pretty.
Do not crush her with words harsh and bitter.
Go ahead.
Do not laugh at her shame and downfall. For a moment, just stop and consider that a man was the cause of it all.
Judge Wallace, you wouldn't consider an offer to stay off the bench, would you? That's pretty good going, gentlemen. Very good. Now, here's another similar problem. See if you can do as well on this. Here is a set of rhyme words at the end, you see? Give me the title of the song and give me, sing or quote, the chorus. Days, prime, days, time. Mr. Adams again.
She may have seen better days.
Did you know that, Judge Wallace? Would you,
when
Mr. Adams,
she was
care to
in
do
her prime, she may have seen better days once upon a time. Though by the wayside she fell, she may yet mend her ways. Some poor old mother is waiting for her, who has seen better days.
I think that was written by James Thornton.
That was written by Krause and Thornton. That's right. This Wallace-Adams combination is remarkable. And I like the work that Simpson and Kieran are doing, too.
How about this one?
Now, here is the last of these rhyme words.
Oh, dear.
You'd like to keep on forever, Mr. Adams? Mm. See what you can do with this. Lady, allow, sister, now. Oh! Mr. Adams and Judge Wallace again.
My mother was a lady like yours you will allow, and you may have a sister who needs protection now. I've come to this great city to find my brother dear, and you wouldn't dare insult me, sir, if Jack
We're throw them out, Kieran. They're breaking my heart.
Thank you very much, House Representative.
Now, gentlemen, back to business. Here's one from Mrs. Gilbert F. Alcott of Bloomington, Illinois. Get 2 out of 3. Who asked the following questions of whom? And I want just plain, ordinary, non-lyrical replies. The first question is, what writest thou? Who asked that of whom? Mr. Kieran.
Abu Ben Adam, according to Leigh Hunt.
Yes?
He asked the angel
who stood
within his room.
That's right. How does it go?
Because exceeding peace had made Ben Adam bold.
And I'm sure you
don't
can
want
with
the whole poem.
I would love to have it, but we just haven't time.
Adam's name lived all the rest anyway.
That's the way it goes, Judge Wallace.
Thanks, old fellow.
How about this one?
Why, Daddy?
Who says that? Well, they all seem to know that in the studio.
Baby?
Mr. Judge Wallace.
Baby Snoop?
Yes. Do you spend any time on the bench at all, Judge?
I have a radio right underneath.
The last question is, how do I love thee? How do I love thee? Mr. Kieran.
That's from the sonnets from the Portuguese by Elizabeth Barrett Browning.
Yes.
How do I love thee? Let me count the ways, and so forth.
And who says it to whom?
She says it to Robert Browning,
to whom the
sonnets were addressed.
Robert Browning, that's quite right. Now, so far, Lucky Strike announces a loss of $50 and 2 sets of the Britannica. And now, Mr. Cross gives an old truth, a new twist, and I think, new meaning.
Everybody knows you get what you pay for. But in buying cigarettes, you get what we pay for. By that, I mean the kind of cigarette you get depends on the kind of tobacco bought for it at the auctions. To illustrate, at auctions in Williamston, North Carolina this past season, the American Tobacco Company paid 56% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 56% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. Well, it's like that at auction after auction all over the South. Lucky Strike consistently pays higher prices to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. So remember, in buying cigarettes, you get what we pay for. And Lucky Strike foots the bill for finer, lighter, milder cigarette tobacco.
An old truth gave birth to a new truth in just 57 seconds, Mr. Cross. And now we'll go on with the second half of the program with a question coming to us from C.R. Holland of Altoona, Pennsylvania. Get 2 out of 3 on this, gentlemen. What are the errors in the following courtroom quotations? 1. Will the defendant take the stand, said the D.A. Mr. Simpson.
Well, that's a violation of the rules of criminal procedure and also, I believe, of the Constitution for any man to be compelled to be a witness against himself.
I don't quite see that he's asking the witness.
The district attorney would not say that.
Why not?
Why not?
He wouldn't say it because if the defendant is privileged to remain mute, and if anybody comments on his failure to take the stand, it would constitute a grave judicial error.
That's right. Now, here's another. The people of the state of New York charged the defendant with shooting the deceased in the New York Customs House on July 15, 1940. Mr. Simpson.
That would be a federal offense, triable under the, in the United States District Court of the Southern District of New York, prosecuted by the United States Attorney rather than the District Attorney of New York County.
That's 100% right. Thank you very much, Mr. Simpson. Mr. Kieran, what were you going to say?
Well, he's saying the same thing in fewer words.
Thereby constituting a record.
Every profession is a conspiracy against the laity, and this is the revolt of the laity.
Yes, and they're doing pretty well, too. Now, how about this one? The defendant's alibi was that he was left-handed and could not have fired the shot. What's wrong with that? Judge Wallace.
An alibi is a defense in which the defendant says he's someplace else other than at the scene of the crime.
Yes, it's a constantly misused word, isn't it? What does alibi mean?
Elsewhere.
Elsewhere, that's right. It's a word we constantly misuse. 3 out of 3, gentlemen. That sends us on to this question from B. Steiner of the city. Get 2 out of 3. This is one about bandits. Can you name, first, the blue-eyed banditti? The blue-eyed banditti. Mr. Kieran.
That's Longfellow's children.
I wonder whether they were children or whether they were his nieces. I'm not sure.
Daughters.
Were they his daughters?
Well,
I guess that's
daughters
children.
Daughters are children.
I think so.
Yeah. Brave.
Can you name them?
Brave, Alice, and Laughing Allegra, and Edith with Golden Hair.
That's right, yes, from the Children's Hour. Thank you, Mr. Kieran. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Now, who was the boy bandit? The boy bandit. Judge Wallace.
Lawrence Bonney, I think, was the boy bandit.
I wouldn't know. I don't think he was called that.
He
may have been a bandit.
He was
a boy bandit. Can you think of any other? Mr. Kieran?
Wasn't a fellow named Floyd...
Pretty Boy Floyd?
I don't know whether he was called a boy bandit. I don't think so. No, it was Jimmy Johnston, the prize fight promoter and manager. Wasn't he called a boy bandit, Mr. Kieran?
Never by me.
Well, you're politer when you write than when you're an information player, Mr. Kieran.
Bonney was a boy bandit, a real boy bandit.
You stick to that?
I stick to that.
All right, we'll let him in. How about the bobbed hair bandit? Mr. Adams.
Cecilia Cooney.
Right. Who was she?
She was She was the bobbed-haired bandit.
All I wanted to know.
Who later went to Auburn Prison.
Yes, and I believe was paroled in 1931, just to get the story absolutely straight. Now, how about this one from R.H. Merritt of South Pasadena, California? Get 2 out of 3, gentlemen, if you can. Identify the girl in an old-time play who did the following things. The first girl swung from a bell clapper. An old-time play, this is. Judge Wallace.
That's the... You mean Leslie Carter, the one that did it in the play?
What's the play called?
A Heart of Mary.
Yes, and who was the girl?
Mrs. Leslie Carter was the girl.
Yes, and what was she called in the play?
I don't recall that.
Her name was Maryland.
I remember Maurice Barrymore played in that show. He was the leading man.
It was the Heart of Maryland, and the name of the heroine was Maryland. And she hung on to the iron tongue of the bell to prevent the clanging, which would reveal the escape of her sweetheart. Now, what girl in an old-time play was dressed as a jockey and won a race? Judge Wallace?
You mean the actual girl, Madge Lessing?
Gee, you do know. That's right. In what play?
In Old Kentucky.
In Old Kentucky, yes, that's right. That's pretty good. Pretty good. You must have had a very interesting childhood, Judge.
I still have a lot of fun.
Can you identify the girl, finally, in an old play who was buried alive? Who was buried alive? This is really the easiest one. This is really the easiest one. My, Mr. Kieran, I'm ashamed of you. Mr. Simpson.
Wasn't Juliet?
You bet.
In Romeo and Juliet.
Yes, Juliet and Romeo and Juliet.
W. Shakespeare.
By W. Shakespeare.
You call that an old-time play?
Well, it's pretty old.
Well, that's where he deceived me. I don't go for the classics.
That's modern?
Well, compared to the memory of Judge Wallace, I suppose it's kind of modern, but...
That's ageless.
That gives us 3 out of 3. Now, here's another political question, gentlemen, coming from Ann Calco of Jamestown, New York. All of the unsuccessful major party candidates for the presidency of the last 7 presidential elections are living, which proves that if you are interested in longevity, all you have to do is be defeated for president. Can you name all of them? There are 7. They're all living. Now, we can all work together on this.
One person has to name all?
Have to name all. Mr. Adams?
One person
no,
has
no,
to?
No, the four of you. Mr. Adams, go ahead.
Well, Herbert Hoover.
Herbert Hoover, that's right. That gives
Alfred
us
E. Smith.
Alfred E. Smith. Thank you very much. That gives us two. Gentlemen, Mr. Kieran.
Mr. Cox.
Yes, James M. Cox. That's three. Mr. Simpson.
Alf Landon.
Alfred, we call him. Alfred.
Alf M. Landon and
yes.
Wendell Wilkie.
And Wendell Wilkie. Now, that gives us two to go. We've got five. Mr. Adams?
John W. Davis.
John W. Davis is quite right. In 1924, Judge Wallace, and that gives us one to go.
James M. Cox.
I guess
we've already had James. We've had Mr. Cox. One more. A presidential candidate who now occupies a position of great eminence indeed.
Charles E.
Charles E.
That's right. That gives us 7 out of 7, gentlemen. Thank you very much indeed. Mrs. C. A. Page of Princeton, New Jersey sends this one in. What is the last name of the feminine half of each of these famous pairs? Get 3 out of 4. John Alden and Priscilla. Mr. Adams?
Mullins.
Mullins, yes. Why should anybody remember that, Mr. Adams?
Well, that's Delia's name.
A lady up in your house who helps you?
Yes.
That's right. George and Eliza. George and Eliza.
It's Uncle Tom's cabin.
It is an Uncle Tom's
cabin. Harris.
Harris. Very good, Mr. Adams. That's swell. How about the following? Gabriel Lajeunesse and Evangeline. Mr. Adams.
Bella Fontaine.
Say, last name Adams we're going to call him. He's marvelous.
Call him Mullins Food Adams.
How about Peter and Wendy? Peter and Wendy. From what book, gentlemen?
Peter Pan.
That's right, Judge Wallace. What are the last names? They have the same last name. Yes, that's how you can get it. Think of the father's name. That's a good way of getting the children's name.
Let me think.
Darling. Darling is the... excuse me, Judge. That's the name I was giving. Darling. This was written
I
on
wondered.
The 3 out of 4 is good enough, gentlemen. How about this one? This comes from Miss Anne Honeycutt of New York. And it's a three-part political question again, yet 2 parts out of 3. Here's the first part. Which party gained representatives in the House at the last election, and how many? Mr. Simpson.
The Democratic Party.
The Democratic Party. Just say it good-naturedly, Mr. Simpson.
Well, they gained about 6 members of the House.
Didn't mean anything.
About 6 is what?
I say about 8.
Yes, that's 6 in Republican parlance. That's right.
When you're counting Democrats.
8 is right.
Only worth 6 Republicans.
Now, Mr. Simpson, we'll give you a chance. Which party gained in the Senate and how much? Which party gained in the Senate and how much, gentlemen?
The Republicans.
Thank you, Judge Wallace. The Republicans gained it how many?
How many did they get, then?
Well, I guess it's what the Republicans would call about 6.
My guess
three,
would
I
be...
think.
What would you say, Mr. Adams?
I think it was 4 or 5.
Choose.
4.
4 is right. Good. That's right. Republicans gained 4. The Democrats lost 3. Now, gentlemen, in which presidential election did President Roosevelt receive the largest popular vote? In which presidential election? Judge Wallace.
In 1936.
In 1936. You couldn't give us the figures out of that capacious mind of yours, could you, Judge?
I'm not very good on figures.
Mr. Simpson.
About 25 million.
In 36?
Yes.
27,400,000. Be fair. Be fair. That's right.
That's the rule of diminishing returns, Simpson.
27,400,000. Well, gentlemen, you were very good on that one. See if you can do as well on this. This comes from Mrs. Hollis McMillan of Oakland, California. Get 2 out of 3. Now, I have 3 phrases, 3 famous quotations. And they all begin... Well, you'll see how they begin when I read them to you. Who wrote or said them? Unwept, unhonored, and unsung. Mr. Kieran.
Walter Scott.
Yes,
Walter Down Scott. To the depths from which he sprung. Unwept,
unhonored, and unsung.
Quartet again. that's right. From what poem, Mr. Kieran?
The Lay of the Last Mystery.
The Lay of the Last Mystery, yes, a very famous quotation. And how about this one, which is much harder? Unhouseled, disappointed, unannealed. Mr. Kieran had his hand up at once.
That's Shakespeare. That's Hamlet, speaking of the way in which his father was dispatched by his traitorous uncle.
Very good. And what do the words mean? Unhouseled, disappointed, unannealed, Mr.
Stockings
Kieran.
Stockings were down.
well, it meant that he was totally unprepared for death. He was unshriven
that's
and
correct.
All the rest of it.
Yes, that's right. Not given extreme unction or any of the sacraments. How about this? Undefeated, untied, unscored upon, and uninvited. Mr. Kieran again.
That was the Colgate football team of a few years ago.
Now, what does it refer to?
They were not invited to the Rose Bowl after having made that fine record.
That's right. Who was the coach then?
Handy Andy Kerr.
Good enough, Mr. Kieran. That's very good. The next one from Barbara Mathis of Budbrook, New Jersey. What animals frequently appear in pictures by Giorgio de Chirico? What animals? Mr. Simpson.
Horses.
Good. Henri-Julien Rousseau. What animals appear? Mr. Kieran.
Well, tigers and lions and any kind of tropical animals, but the larger mammals, preferably.
Yes, monkeys, tigers. And finally, T.A. Dorgan. What animals appear in pictures by T.A. Dorgan? Mr. Kieran again.
Dogs.
Dogs, yes. Who was T.A. Dorgan?
The famous cartoonist.
The old-time funny strip artist. That gives us 3 out of 3, gentlemen. And that, I think, gives us a very good record for the second half of the program. And now I hope that Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams, as regulars, will forgive us for mentioning another kind of experts who are even harder to stump. Tell them who, Mr. Cross.
They're the tobacco experts, gentlemen. And the reason they're so hard to stump on the subject of smoking is because it's their bread-and-butter business to know just who buys what tobacco at the auctions. Yes, and the prices paid. Now, suppose you cornered Mr. Tobacco Expert and asked him this question. What cigarette do you smoke? Here's the answer you might get. Every year, I follow the tobacco auctions from Georgia through the Carolinas to Kentucky. And every year, I see Lucky Strike pay the price to get finer, lighter, naturally milder tobaccos. Can't you guess what cigarette I smoke? Well, to save guessing, here are the facts. Sworn records show that twice as many independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen smoke Lucky's exclusively as smoke all other cigarettes combined. That fact will keep you from being stumped if you want the natural mildness of finer, lighter tobaccos. Ask for the tobacco expert cigarette, Lucky Strike. With men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Lucky Strike announces rewards totaling $50 and 2 sets of the Britannica. Thank you, Judge Wallace. Thank you, Mr. Simpson, for helping us out this evening. Now, next week, the old reliable trio will be back in full force. Kieran, Adams, and Levant. And our guest of honor will be the distinguished and well-known American playwright, Owen Davis, whose mystery play, Mr. and Mrs. North, opens soon. Now remember, listeners, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. If the question should stump our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the latest edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your letters with questions and correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, the famous tobacco auctioneer of Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, fully interpreted, ladies and gentlemen, means Lucky's pay higher prices for the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. With independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, warehousemen, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.